Hello and welcome everyone back to the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling Podcast. It is your host, Hyman. I am here in the cramped closet, the Hold for Hold Pro Wrestling headquarters. That doesn't get any easier to say, but this has been a week, boy. This has been a week. Today is like the big day at my job. Like everything I've done for the last couple months all led to this one day where it actually all goes into action. And that's a shoot. It all goes into action, and I did really well, I think. I think everyone's really happy with everything I did, mostly because I had to do it all alone, and I've only been at this job for a little bit. So, yeah, it was a pretty good day on that front. I am tired, though. I will say that I had to wake up early to, like, do all this stuff and get everything prepped before, like, the marketing, whatever. Anyways, that's all boring stuff. That's not pro wrestling. But just to go into, like, a more like the human aspect of who I am as this host, that's what I'm going through right now. I'm kind of on a really good feeling right now, though, because like I said, everything went well. So I want to talk about pro wrestling. I will admit, because of this being such a monumental week, this might not be the most detailed episode, but they haven't been for the last couple weeks, so you know that. But like I said before, and like I'll continue saying until I get the correct and comfortable routine down and format for this show, this is everything you need to know in pro wrestling. There's no fluff, no filler. We're just going to go in, have a good time. Let's talk about everything. I've had one thing on my mind all week aside from work. But the one thing that keeps me going, keeps my creative muscle flowing, is what should Triple H do? I think that's the question floating around ever since Vince's retirement. And I've had a lot of thoughts about this because obviously I'm a big nerd and I love to imagine running a pro wrestling company. And to the scale that WWE does, it's just unimaginable. But, you know, there's some stuff that I think that Triple H should do now that he has the book, now that he's more in charge. And wants to set that precedent, that new era of the Triple H, Paul Levesque creative era. And I think he's going to do a good job regardless, just based on what I've seen so far. I think everything he's been doing lately has not only like shown the new direction that they're going to, but acknowledged the past in a way that I think is really classy and I think is nice and is not jarring. I always go back and think of that WCW episode where they just vacated all the titles. You remember that? They just said, you know, we were being poorly ran and now we're changing directions. So we are vacating all the titles and we're going to have a new champion tonight, right? That was wild to think about. That is just like, I can't even, that's just wild, right? So obviously you don't want to go that route, but what's the happy medium? And I think that Triple H just found that. Paul Levesque has found that. He's, you know, allowed people to finish out their current stories without it being too, like a shoehorned ending. You know what I mean? And some stories are continuing and they're just evolving in a new layer of them, you know? And I think that's really cool stuff. I think it's nice to see that. But yeah, along with all the good things he's been doing, there's still possibilities on the table for what he can do in the future. And one of the things that I think he's already taken an initiative on doing it based on Monday Night Raw, which we will talk about later, but elevating the mid-card. I think this is a point that every single wrestling fan makes about AEW, about WWE, NXT, any promotion. I think the mid-card is often the most overlooked or underrated. If you look back at like 2001, WWE, when they acquired WCW and ECW, that mid-card was just stellar. You had names like RVD and Eddie Guerrero going at it on a regular basis, creating matchups that were not possible before, right? And I think right now we're sitting at a point where the roster is super deep. You have a ton of great characters and great pro wrestlers that can do some amazing things. And I think that one thing NXT normally excelled at was their mid-card. Even back before they had the North American title, just having the regular standard men's and women's world titles and then the tag titles, they elevated their tag division to an extraordinary ranking, so much so that they were able to pull from that and get two next world champions in Gargano and Ciampa, you know? And I think that that's something that Triple H knows. He's going to do it again. I feel like we're going to see a great revival of the tag division. No pun intended. I don't think we're going to see FTR. But I think we're going to see a great revival of the tag division. And I think we're going to finally get a more developed women's division. And same with the IC and United States Championships. The United States Championship was the entire focus of Monday Night Raw for the most part, and I loved it. That's just like breath of fresh air. Great stuff. And yeah, I really think he should continue on this path. I think AEW has done really well with most of its mid-card titles, and it's really not anything new. You know, they're not reinventing the wheel. They're just spotlighting really good talent. Which, you know, we all know where I feel about AEW's on their some of their other stuff, but I think their mid-card titles have been fairly protected, especially those tag titles. So, yeah, that's something definitely Triple H should do. Along with this, another big point that I've been thinking about is variety. I think that as much as I loved NXT, NXT 1.0, that is, I can acknowledge that at its worst, it lacked variety, both in a wrestling style and in a character and storytelling standpoint, you know? We often got the same character for most of the world champions after Ciampa kind of finished out. Everyone was just badass who liked to fight. And while I love a badass who loves to fight like Danielson and Mox, and Finn Balor and Kyle O'Reilly even was doing that character, which, you know, he was not the best at that. I think he could have done more of a comedic take on that and had better off. But anyways, essentially, he should learn from those mistakes in NXT. I think he would acknowledge that those character ranges weren't as deep as they could have been. And right now, NXT 2.0 is nothing but character, which is another form of the wrong kind of variety, you know? And this ties into elevating those mid-card titles because you don't necessarily need every challenger to be the straightforward, I want to be the best, so I got to beat you. You don't need that story every single time, and I felt like NXT did that story quite a lot. But when NXT was at its best, it had really great stories that revolved around personal relations of relationships and how those intertwine with the wild characters of pro wrestling. One of my favorite parts of the Ciampa Gargano story was Aleister Black's involvement in it and kind of being annoyed by this stupid, petty personal relationship when, you know, he's just trying to be spooky and be the best at dominating everyone by being spooky. And it all worked. I felt like there was a lot of things that didn't need to be said. They just worked. And that takes time to build characters that work on that level. NXT UK is a great example of characters interacting with each other in a natural and alive manner. Alive isn't a great word, but organic manner, where everyone has a specific character and you kind of know how they would interact with each other and who would get on whose nerves based on their actions or their personality, you know? Really forming out people instead of forming out characters. I think it's something that is hard to achieve. Don't get me wrong. This is not something that even I would fully know how to achieve that. But when it's done perfectly. Like, it's one of the best aspects of pro wrestling. And, you know, we've had glimpses here or there on the main roster, but I think a lot of times the old regime did not like personalities. Bruce Pritchard has mentioned something about, like, people come to see Diesel. They don't come to see Kevin Nash. And how wrong was he? I mean, that it's just crazy. I think that belief was still intact in WWE, and I think that's something we could move past. One of the things I've been seeing too is that the 24/7 division hasn't been used at all during this transition. And That's a great, like, little facet of writing or of creativity that you could do with that division, right? We all have a really fond and nostalgic memory of Crash Holly and the Hardcore title. And the 24/7 division, essentially, that's what it's trying to capture. It's not being subtle about it either, but it hasn't really done it yet. And I think there's some reasons for that. One, I think the division got saddled with a lot of bad gimmicks, especially Akira Tozawa. I think his ninja gimmick is one of the worst and slightly offensive gimmicks in the roster right now. And I think that really takes away all these like goofiness, takes away from the chaotic and serious-ish nature of this title. I think some of the best portions of that title has been between Drake Maverick and R-Truth, where they made it personal. They explored new ranges with that title that you wouldn't see on a normal basis. And I think that's what that title could be good for, is exploring more personal aspects of pro wrestlers. Will we get that? I don't know. He might just write it off, but I think that's kind of a mistake. I definitely think they need a new title design. And honestly, I don't know if we'll get any new title designs now that I just said that. That'd be pretty cool to see some new titles. But there's, I don't know. They like having the branded stuff, don't they? They like the WWE title being just a giant W. And I don't know. Well, the IC title, that's like really designed. Like that's a whole thing. Where the U.S. title feels like a United States flag. I don't know. We'll see. Maybe that's another interesting point. Maybe we'll get like a rebrand with Triple H in charge. I would love to see a new world title. I kind of just want Roman to carry one title anyway. So uniting those titles would be really fun. That'd be cool. Anyways, though, off topic. Just provide variety. I think that's really important. And it'll be leaps and bounds away from his NXT days. And my last thing that I was thinking about, you know, racking this silly little brain of mine that's shaking every time I move my head, is I want Triple H to cater to fans. Vince often almost despised us, right? Like, anytime fans overrode the plan, he punished the performer for that. A great example, of course, is Matt Cardona. Even Rusev with Rusev Day, they didn't do anything with that. And I hope that's done with. That's so petty, and it's so obvious when they're doing it, too. They're trying to get you to shut up, essentially. They don't care that it's not going to get any more reaction because that's what they want. They don't want the reaction that you've been giving them. And so, yeah, I just stop that. If something's getting over organically, run with it. Period, point blank, just run with it. Now the second half of this question, I'm not gonna have a great answer for it, right? Because like I said, I'm just a nerd. I'm just sitting here in a cramped closet talking about this stuff. But how should AEW respond? That's been another like sticking point of like, what is Tony Khan gonna do now that Vince is gone? You know, he kind of created, this is not really my shared opinion, but I do see the argument in this. A lot of people say that Tony Khan created this company because of Vince McMahon's shortcomings in capturing this niche of pro wrestling fans. The Ring of Honor fans, the more diehard fans that were getting shunned away by Vince McMahon, right? And that's kind of how the inception of AEW could be argued. And I wouldn't necessarily argue against it. I think that's a pretty fair point. I especially think that Tony Khan did discover the niche of hardcore fans in the United States, but he did it through Ring of Honor, essentially, and through these companies that are here that are like, yeah, we know that there's a great fan base here. It's just we need money, and Tony Khan had that money, you know? But anyways, a lot of people are saying, will Tony Khan change his booking philosophy now that he might have actual creative competition, I guess would be the way to put it. Someone who cares about pro wrestling in a manner that Tony Khan does, right? Who who likes pro wrestling, not just sports entertainment. And so how will Tony Khan respond to this? I honestly think that they're just going to try and match it. I don't think Tony Khan's one of those guys that's like stubborn to no end. Although I could be wrong, because I mean, look how long we've been telling him to change that women's division and he barely is starting to do anything. But anyways, I think in an overall sense, he wants to keep the business afloat. He wants to keep his fans, right? So he's going to probably try and match it. He's going to try and see their elevated mid-card, their variety of storytelling and wrestling styles, and he's going to cater to fans. I think he'll do exactly, if it's laid out this way, I think he would do it exactly like that, because that's the smart thing to do, right? If you see your competitor doing something, you need to do it and do it better. That's how American economics works, unfortunately. But I've just been seeing a lot of people just asking about, well, is Tony Khan going to change anything? I think he will. I think he's going to have to keep that competitive edge, to keep those hardcore fans that are very much the core audience of AEW. He's going to have to do everything that WWE does, but in a way that caters to the hardcore fans even more. So he'll probably still be able, I think that's one thing like he'll still be able to do is like blood and guts, stuff like that, where WWE might have war games, but they don't have blood. They don't have blood and guts. They don't have death matches. They don't do stuff that, you know, it's a niche, but it is a niche. People will tune in for that. And I think that's stuff that's, it keeps wrestling fresh. And that's all I hope for, is for wrestling to continue to get better and be fresh and be fun to watch. But yeah, that's my like tirade, my little thought bubble that I've been having the last week. And, you know, I'm excited, like I've been saying, I'm excited to see how WWE is going to turn out these next couple months and all these stories coming. And it's already really fun. Like, we're going to talk about Raw and SummerSlam here in a second, but yeah, I've been having a great time watching pro wrestling again. And to be honest, it's like refreshing. It's really refreshing to be excited for pro wrestling in any matter is fun, you know? It just is. But anyways, let me catch my breath, get a little drink of water, and I'll be right back and we'll talk about SummerSlam and all that craziness that happened there. Well, you guys wouldn't know it, but I had to not only like come back and record everything, but now I have to re-record everything because it turns out my microphone crapped out somewhere in between. So let's hope I can finish this. But while I have you guys, let's talk SummerSlam. So essentially, SummerSlam was bookend by two amazing matches, and that will, I think, stand the test of time. You have Bianca Belair taking on Becky Lynch in what is sure to be, like, talked about women's wrestling, right? Just stellar and great storytelling on an overall level. The symmetry there of SummerSlam holding such important weight in their feud, and for it to end the way it did with them embracing afterwards, Becky putting out her hand for the handshake and it actually turning into a hug, was a great moment, along with the match itself just being great. And then after the match, Bayley comes to the ring flanked by Io Shirai, who is now Io Sky, which I don't hate the name, it's just going to take a little bit of time for me to get used to that. And then Dakota Kai as well. And this is a great faction. If you follow the Hold for Old TikTok, you already know I'm obsessed with this faction. And so, yeah, great stuff. I am going to skip the middle of SummerSlam. I skipped the middle of SummerSlam in the old review, so don't worry. It's not because I'm a little bit upset. It's because it was fine. It just wasn't anything stellar. And, yeah, I mean, there was some good stuff in there. The Usos, Street Profits, always good. I was just surprised Jeff Jarrett didn't use his guitar, but he busted out for Ric Flair's final match, so there's that. And then also, Liv Morgan's like title offense, I think that's more of it was a cop-out, but it's to push this down the line because they just turned Ronda heel, so they needed to do something there. But let's get to what everyone's been talking about since the show went off the air, and that's Roman Reigns and Brock Lesnar's insane last man standing match. Let me be clear, I love this match. I think it was by far the most chaotic, fun match WWE's put on in a long time. I wouldn't put it up there with Anarchy in the Arena just because Eddie Kingston trying to light his own teammate on fire as collateral damage is just beyond anything that WWE can legally do, but it's really good. And it's possibly their best match in their feud since their first WrestleMania match, which, God, that's crazy. But yeah, this was really good. I enjoyed every minute of it. I didn't think about a single thing while I was watching this. I was just in the moment, enjoying everything. From Brock Lesnar doing a Luthes press off the tractor to him using said tractor to lift the ring up with Reigns inside of it. I thought that was just so great. But after the match, once the dust had settled, I did kind of think the ending didn't feel like the culmination of this feud that I would have loved to see. But, you know, it's okay. It was a good ending. It needed to happen. I kind of figured a burial of some sort would happen, right, to end this. But, you know, it's just for me, and this wouldn't fit in the match, obviously, because it wasn't that kind of match. But for me, I would have liked to have seen the guillotine choke out Brock Lesnar and make him not come back to his feet. I think that would have done more for this feud to really finish it. Because right now, it does feel like it could be reopened, theoretically. But we'll see. And that's a big hypothetical because I don't even know what Brock Lesnar's like contract is going to be like, if he's wanting to come back to WWE. That's all up in the air right now. But anyways, SummerSlam, great show. Let's talk Monday Night Raw. Raw, focus on that mid-card, baby. It was great because of that. I think it was the breeziest Monday Night Raw in a long time. Probably since I started doing this podcast. And there's been some good Raws in between there, but this was just really good. We had a great video package to hype up the U.S. title, really explaining that the U.S. title isn't this nationalist thing. It's a symbol of opportunity in the WWE and how you could use it to rise to the top. And yeah, it's great. It was a great video package. A lot of Dusty Rhodes in there, so some people saying that's a little tease. But yeah, then we had three mid-card matches to determine a number one contender to Bobby Lashley's U.S. title, and it was great. We got to see Mustafa Ali and Ciampa and Chad Gable and Dolph Ziggler and AJ Styles and The Miz all really go at it. So basically, it was two triple threat matches, one between AJ Styles, Mustafa Ali, and The Miz. And the winner of that would face the winner of the other triple threat match of Ciampa, Chad Gable, and Dolph Ziggler. And so AJ Styles and Ciampa won their respective triple threats, so they faced each other later in the night. And with the help of The Miz, Ciampa won the opportunity to face Bobby Lashley. That was good stuff. And people immediately are like, oh, Ciampa's being elevated because of Triple H. And yeah, I mean, he should be. He's really good talent. But the other great stuff that happened on the night was Bayley and her group running roughshod, really establishing their character dynamic early on. So Becky and Bianca started off the night by having a promo, really acknowledging each other, giving each other a lot of respect, and Becky in a sling telling the crowd, you know, she might be gone for a little bit. She had a separated shoulder during the SummerSlam match, which is a real bummer, but she's going to be out for a minute. So she goes backstage. Bayley and her group attack her. Bianca runs backstage in heels. Great moment. And chases the heels off. Although it was a little funny because she gets back there. And she's like, where'd they go? Where'd they go? And no one's answering her. And then she has to just console Becky. Like, are you okay? And no, she's not okay. But later in the night, though, Bianca, like, calls them out and is like, I want to beat some ass, so one of you better step up. And Io Shirai steps up. That's great already. You know, not cowardly. It's a real breath of fresh air to not see a cowardly heel, so good stuff. But that was Raw for the most part. That's, like, the most important stuff out of Raw. I think this is a really good sign of things to come. Next up, we're going to talk about AEW Dynamite. They did some good stuff on here. Thunderstorm, the team of Toni Storm and Thunder Rosa, took on Britt Baker and Jamie Hayter in the first hour of Dynamite, and it was really, really good stuff. I've been critical of Thunder Rosa's title reign so far, and I love Thunder Rosa. It's just they haven't given her a great story yet, and I think returning to the well of Britt Baker is probably a good idea because they're good. They're just good together. She was wearing some sandbagging tee as well, Thunder Rosa was, and I saw a lot of people go up in arms about that, but I don't know. I feel like her wearing that was like them acknowledging that she, like they're saying she doesn't do this. That's why she can wear it. You know what I mean? So we'll see. Who knows? I'm giving her the benefit of the doubt on that. But the other great thing that came out of Dynamite, Adam Cole swerved the Young Bucks. He calls in a meeting in the middle of the ring, and he gets on there and he says, you know, I'm not medically cleared. Kyle O'Reilly isn't medically cleared. So if you guys don't want to team with Bobby Fish, then you guys can't participate in the tournament, in the Trios tournament. And the Young Bucks don't like this, but they don't say anything yet. Adam Cole then is like, well, I guess I'm not using my words correctly. You guys won't be physically able to participate in the tournament. And the Red Dragon come from behind, chop block, and they beat him up, just whooping on the Young Bucks. A real betrayal that got a little kid in the crowd crying. That was crazy. But then Hangman Page makes a save with some butterfly jeans and a lead pipe, and he looks so good doing it. And they've been building this story pretty subtly. I know there's been some teases both on Dynamite and BTE. So good stuff, though. Really good stuff. I'm excited for that Trios match. The Hung Bucks versus the Undisputed Era. That's going to be good. Following this, though, let's close out the show with the saddest bit of news of the week. No, not Ric Flair's final match. That's actually pretty good news, probably, especially considering he didn't die in the ring. But Team Taz, my favorite faction, possibly my favorite faction of all time. It seems they are no more. Essentially, Powerhouse Hobbs had a match with some jabroni. He beat the jabroni with a stiff lariat. Ricky Starks comes out. They start brawling. He jumps right into a spine buster. And Taz is like, you know, I don't know what's going on in Team Taz anymore. And my name's Taz. So I think we need to disband. I wish nothing but the best of luck for all three of these men, Hook, Hobbs, and Starks. That was really hard to say. And, you know, best, he gave the Future Endeavors thing. And yeah, it's just sad, man. I love that group. But I'm excited to see this Ricky Starks Powerhouse Hob storyline. I think that Starks is a guy who can tell a good story. And that's kind of what Dynamite needs right now, is storytelling. Because guys like CM Punk and MJF and Chris Jericho are kind of not here. Well, Chris Jericho's here, but he's also feuding with like the only other guy that tells stories, and that's Eddie Kingston. So, and all his stories are just, I hate you. And I love that. But so yeah, I think an interesting story is going to be really refreshing to see. This also kind of like, people were talking about what the tag division looks like now with the Young Bucks and seemingly FTR out of the picture. And we had a great garbage can match, dumpster match, whatever the hell it is, where you put people in a dumpster and then you throw them off stage, between the Acclaimed and the Gun Club. And the Acclaimed are really over right now. And if there's ever been a time for them to be able to challenge for the tag titles, it's kind of now, when you have the big guys preoccupied and probably going to move over to the Trios division to establish that division. So I wouldn't be surprised if we see the Acclaimed challenge for those titles at All Out or Full Gear, just because I think they're really over. They're really over. They made a great, Max Caster did a great line about Vince McMahon. I'm starting to come around to Max Caster. I think I went on a really harsh rant not too long ago about how I thought his gimmick wasn't intimidating. And it's still not. I still think that his gimmick is really tough to pull off. But these one-liners are, in their playful nature, work. They're playful heel and not trying to be raunchy heel, you know? And I think that lands better with me. But yeah. Anyways, guys, my voice is getting tired because I've already done this too many times. But please leave a rating or review wherever you're listening to this. Please follow Hold for Hold on TikTok, Instagram, and Twitter at Hold for Hold. I have some really, like, I feel a little, that creative bone is starting to kick in, and I want to make more TikToks, so make sure to follow me on there. I'm also going to post them on Reels anyway, so whatever. Just, you know, support the channel anywhere you can, because obviously that'd be nice. But yeah, I'll talk to you guys in the next one. Bye.